Hey, TLSers, this is David Hayward. Today I'm talking with one of our members, Jerry DeWitt, ex-pastor and now atheist, and the author of the book Hope After Faith. Hello, Jerry. David here. How are you?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm sorry for first this delay, just because I was having to rearrange my office space just a little bit in order to make everything work, and then for the much longer delay.
Oh, listen. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been following your story. Your books are in order. I haven't read it yet, but I'm in Canada, so things take a little longer to get here, but I'm really looking forward to reading it.
Well, we had this very interesting, fortunate and unfortunate phenomenon going with Canada. Whenever I did the CBC radio interview, it just, it just blew up over there.
Well, of course. Well, Gian Gomeshi, he's very, very popular here in Canada.
Absolutely. And he was wonderful. He was wonderful to visit with.
Yeah. CBC Radio is our national radio broadcasting station, and it's government funded and everything. So, and it's equivalent to NPR down there, I think, in a way.
Right, right. Yeah. And so we, almost instantly, we did very well. And even on Amazon, the books got on back order very quickly. And so, it's one of those, as the old preacher says, that is a positive problem.
You're still quoting preachers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Listen, I love your accent because my wife is from Alabama. She's from Butler, Alabama. And we would go and visit her family in Bastrop, Louisiana.
Sure. Bastrop. Absolutely. Well, yeah. I'm not, I've got a weird accent because I'm definitely not Cajun or French, but apparently I'm country enough for it to be noticeable.
Well, come on.
Sometimes people are able to guess that I'm, that I'm not local, so that's good.
Well, Lisa's family, I think they're close to Duck Dynasty.
Oh, are they? Yeah.
I think so.
I'm trying to think now, aren't they up around in the Shreveport area? The
Shreveport, Monroe, or?
Yeah, Monroe and Shreveport, yeah. Louisiana is so strange because actually when you get that far north, it's really like you're in southern Arkansas.
Okay.
And where we're at, we're so far west that we're really more like we're in Texas. So the real Louisiana is really down in the bottom southeast corner. That's when people think of Louisiana, that's what they're thinking of.
Yeah. Well, I love your accent. I feel very nostalgic now, all sentimental. And Lisa and I have been married for 33 years, but I picked her up in Missouri and
I never let her go.
Couldn't let her go, but I brought her north.
Way north.
Yeah. Hey, your book, Hope After Faith, an ex-pastor's journey from belief to atheism.
Right.
And, it must be doing very well.
I think it's doing well. To be honest with you, the whole publishing game, I find it very unnatural and nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah.
And so I stopped looking at numbers or paying attention to such things quite a ways back. Right. I figured out very, very early on that with my addictive personality, I was going to be checking, the Amazon, ranking 35 times a day. And so I had to let it go if I was going to function.
Yeah.
But I think it's doing well. Everyone else involved seems to be very pleased.
Yeah. I've got a question for you though. And this is just my, naughtiness coming in. Why didn't you call it Beyond Belief?
Let me tell you, here's the thing. I didn't choose the name.
Okay.
The publisher chose the name, and they, quite honestly, in my entire adult life, and I think my son would verify this because he was present when it happened, I've never been more angry in my entire adult life than when the name of the book was changed.
Oh, what was your original title?
My original title was Fearless. And I had an entirely different narrative. It was always going to be a memoir, but just the structure of the narrative was going to be different. Uh-huh. And the key, the key points throughout the narrative were going to be based on these moments of intense fear and overcoming that fear and moving on to the next stage of life. And so that's what it was originally, the direction it was going to go. And they just said, no, that's not what it's going to be. It's going to be hope after faith. And I really lost my ever loving mind.
I thought like beyond belief, because yeah. I think that's just beyond belief sort of means it's unbelievable, because your story yeah. is really unbelievable.
Well, you know, it is. And had it been something like beyond belief, it would have had multiple dimensions in the title, because so many of the, the smaller parts of the story are, people find them fascinating, and they find them beyond belief because they haven't experienced, you mm-hmm. know, things mm-hmm. like that. And so it's, that would have been a great title. Maybe that'd be the next one.
But beyond belief, meaning it's unbelievable, but it's not uncommon.
No, it's definitely not uncommon. I think the only thing that makes our story a little unique is because of the very, very niched part of Christianity that we spent so much time in.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the only thing. But in general, yes, the themes are universal, and the experience is universal.
Yeah. The members of the Lasting Supper, at this point, there's over 310 members now, but there are a wide spectrum of people who are transitioning from a place of either they're believers or struggling to stay in the church or struggling to leave. Some are already have moved towards agnosticism or atheism. But there's a wide spectrum of people represented on the Lasting Supper. And the interesting thing is, to me, is that we're trying to provide a space for people to transition through these very terrifying stages of, one of the websites said, deconverting.
Right.
You know, and it is terrifying, isn't it?
It is. It is terrifying for lots of different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrifying whenever you look out across the landscape of your life and you don't know what will still be standing after you complete this part of the journey. And I do think it's part of the journey. I think it's part of the life experience. You don't know which relationships will remain, what type of of security and structures within your life will still remain once you're so different now, once people consider you to be so different, who will stay with you? How many of your friends are strictly fair weather friends? How many of your relationships are built upon things that are uniquely you mm-hmm. versus the shared or common interest of religion? And so it is very terrifying. And then I think there's a part of it that we don't always address, and that is, you can be very concerned for yourself, even for your own mental health, because so many times people around you will say, you know, what's the big deal?
Yeah,
you know, why are you making an issue out of this? Why can't you just, you know, go along with everyone else? Why is this so important? And I really, really went through an agonizing season of wondering, do I just hate myself? You know, am I just trying to sabotage myself? You know, I
yeah.
have good church, and on top of it, now I've been added. You know, I've added this really good, you know, secular job. You know, my position in our little fishbowl is somewhat prestigious. You know, we finally, after almost two full decades of struggle, we finally have our finances going in the right direction. We've got this nice little home on one of the most beautiful streets in our little town. And now I want to do this, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So what's wrong with me? Why would I do this to myself? So it is a very, very fearful time. The foundations of your life
yeah.
literally crumbling out from under your feet. And, yeah. and that's horrifying.
Yeah. I left the ministry. I was in the ministry for over 30 years myself. And I left the ministry in the spring of 2010. And
that's very recent.
Yeah, 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 it is.
And I didn't know it was that recent. I was just barely a year behind you.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a lot of deconstruction and deconverting going on before that point, but the real trauma And the terrifying parts really kicked in after I left the ministry and the church, because I no longer had all of the support and network of friendships and everything that I had before. So right. it was quite a struggle. I was reading just a little bit about your background. I just want to share this with people who are listening in. It says you started with doubting the existence of hell.
Yes.
And then there was a point in your pastoral ministry where you couldn't with integrity pray for the healing of one of your members' sons.
And brother, right.
Brother, correct. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it was shortly after that you left the ministry, and then you were outed as an atheist because a photo of you with Dawkins somehow yes. got circulated.
Well, not somehow. I was foolish enough to put it on Facebook, not thinking anyone would know the difference.
And then you were fired from your secular job.
I was, yeah.
And your wife left you.
Yes. Yeah, I left the situation. You know, I always try to make sure
okay.
and give her the benefit of the doubt as much as I can. But I can get to that part and explain that momentarily. But yes, that's the storyline. That's how all of this has played out. I knew for some time that I was no longer a Christian by the strictest definition.
Right.
You know, of Christianity as far as modernity is concerned, and so. But I wrestled with it, and I'd been wrestling with it for two decades, and so it really wasn't anything new to have issues with the Bible, to have issues with my, you know, with the doctrine of the people that I was fellowshipping with. You know, this was just kind of me. This is who Jerry was. He was always outside of the box that he was, you know, that he was supposed to be working inside of. And so by the time that I left my second church as full-time pastor, as the senior pastor, I knew when I left the first church that I was a deist, and I was actually studying on deism. You know, I didn't know that's what I was until I began to study on it. And obviously, that's very far from today's version of Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't. Yeah. You know, there's no such thing as modern day Christianity that's not purely theistic,
right.
Very theistic, ultra theistic.
Right.
To the fact, you know, to the place of Jesus helps you find your parking space theistic. You know,
doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does.
If you,
yeah, exactly. I mean, it did just for me today. Of course, he got lucky because the parking lot was pretty empty. It was around 12, but you know, that happens. So it's you know, so I was deist and was just beginning to get involved in trying to broaden my understanding of the sciences, you know, going through my own period of enlightenment along with the founding fathers, you know, mm-hmm. trying to figure all this stuff out. And so but by the time that I left the second church that I had pastored as the senior pastor, I knew that I really wasn't a Christian anymore. I wasn't sure what I was or where I was going, but I was refusing to leave the ministry. Mm-hmm. In my mind, there was no world outside of the ministry. And I thought, for a lack of better words, I really thought this internal torment was my cross to bear for reading books that I wasn't supposed to read.
I totally recognize that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, this is just the torment I have to live in, mm-hmm. you know. And so I struggled in every way I could to try to figure out, was there a way to stay in the ministry? And so the night that the young lady called about her brother, and she was very close to our family, I just realized all the pieces just suddenly fit together in that one moment, and I realized that I couldn't pray for her. And it wasn't just that I was suddenly being super integrous, you know, that right. I was going to stand my ground and not pray for her because I don't believe. It was more that her brother was in such a dangerous, dangerous condition that in my mind I was thinking, if I pray for her and he dies or he comes out of this in very, very bad shape, this could put her on the path that I've been on for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
This could make her doubt. This could, you know, because ultimately, if she thinks through this process, it's not going to be my prayer or my fault that this didn't work out, but God's going to have some explaining to do.
Right.
And And I didn't want that for her. I was not enjoying the process. There were moments throughout the 20 years that I would learn something new, and it would feel, you know, it'd feel like a hot air balloon finally getting fully inflated. You know, I would feel alive and light, and feel like I was actually ascending, like I was getting closer to God as I was discovering these things. But by and large, because of the effect that it had on my family, the effect that it was having on us financially and socially, by and large, the experience was a torture. It was for the whole 20 years. And so I at that moment did not want her to experience that. So I dodged it and didn't pray for her, and had to fully admit, as I was realizing in that moment, that not only was I not a Christian, not only was I not going to be able to figure out a way to stay in Christian ministry, but I realized that I truly was an atheist. Mm-hmm. And so I reached out for help. I received help from Dan Barker. Dan Barker connected me with the Clergy Project, and through the Clergy Project, I began to learn about this other world that I didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. You know? Which has eventually led to me having a picture with Richard Dawkins.
Oh, my goodness. That must have been something.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
I want to throw something past you. I want to know what you think. What I noticed in my own journey, and in the journey of many people I know, on the Lasting Supper, for example, one of the first things we encounter is doubting some theology. So, for example, yours was you started to doubt the existence of hell.
Exactly.
And then once that to me is the thin end of the wedge. Like yes. That, once you allow that suspicion and doubt to come in, then man, hold on, fasten your seatbelt.
That's
because then the next step was, if you don't believe in that, then you start to doubt all the supernatural.
That's right.
And then if you doubt that, you start to doubt that you can have a personal relationship with a divine being.
That's exactly.
Or even if there is a divine being. And then you start to feel uncomfortable in the community you're in. And, eventually you start feeling alienated just because of your own different beliefs and so on. And then finally, there's practical consequences to the changing of your beliefs. Yes. And for you, it was getting fired and, your family breaking up and so on.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. What I've said, even when I was in Christianity, and I guess there was a part of me that obviously everything I say is going to sound Christianese, so I'll stop apologizing for it. But, you know, the handwriting was on the wall, and I guess I could see it at different times from afar off. What I've been saying for a long time is that once you question your traditions, mm-hmm. your superstitions are soon to follow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just a natural part of the process. You can't question your traditions and your theology. And unless you find some way to shut your brain off and to find a very comfortable place to stop, eventually it has to cause you to question the supernatural, which will inevitably move you out of theism, you know. It's almost impossible not to do it. The way that I break it down and the way that it's even in the book is, my first real issue was when I started at 17 preaching the oneness Pentecostal message, I was immediately in conflict because I had been raised by oneness Pentecostals who happen to just be very, very beautiful people that God loves everybody. Mm-hmm. And though you can find, a few scriptures to support that, the Pentecostal doctrine didn't live that out. And so I was immediately in conflict. You know, I like to quote Mike Williams. Have you connected with Mike Williams out of Houston, Texas?
No.
Yeah, he has the Gospel Revolution. And of course, is still very much a Christian, not agnostic or atheist, but he definitely played a major role in my process. And he has this wonderful saying that he coined where he says, he asked the question, is your heart kinder than your doctrine? Mm-hmm. And I immediately ran into that, almost like from day one. To where I was like, really? Are these people? Are these poor young ladies who really just want to fit in and not feel socially rejected at high school? Are they? Are is the God of the universe really going to send them to hell for cutting their hair? You know, does the same God who devised quantum mechanics give a flip about the length of their hair? Is that really possible? Is that what the Apostle Paul's really talking about? You know, and if so, why?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was in trouble from the very beginning, and in secret, though I never made my way to, anything like the UUs or anything like that, in secret, I became, towards the end of my ministry, a universalist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went from God loves everyone to God saves everyone.
Right.
But even then, there's so much in the Bible that does not support that.
No, there isn't.
You know,
yes.
that I had to try to figure it all out and make it all work. And so, thanks to, I'm sure you're aware of Bishop Carlton Pearson.
Yep.
People like that, you know, once again, in secret, over on the sidelines, I was messing around with the inclusion, you know, the gospel of inclusion, and Robert Rutherford, and different people like that, Harold Lovelace,
right.
People like that, and loved it, you know, was finally finding some doctrine to stand on that was as kind as my heart was.
Mm-hmm.
So I began to really work with this thing of, well, God's really in everyone. And then eventually I stumbled across Joseph Campbell and began to, you know, contemplate the idea that maybe this whole God conversation comes up because of our lack of knowledge and our lack of understanding. And as I always like to say, then you're just one good book away from God as a delusion.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's interesting. Joseph Campbell came up in our last podcast, one of our members. Jerry, you wanted to call the book, originally you wanted to call it Fearless. Can you, one of the things we, the members of The Lasting Supper, many, many people do, is just the sheer terror of the possibility of becoming an atheist. Honestly,
yes.
This people actually do say, what if I become an atheist? Well, I'm afraid of becoming an atheist. So,
yes.
What are some of the most fearful moments that you experienced during your journey?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was riddled with fear. Mm-hmm. I grew up as a fearful child. In my mid-20s, a little later than some people, I ended up going through anxiety and panic attack disorder. And so I'm very acquainted with fear. I'm still a very, not fearful person, but a very anxious person.
Okay.
I carry my stress very, very seriously. You know, I really take everything.
You're a good steward of your stress.
I am a very good steward of my stress. I have not lost a penny of it. And matter of fact, I've multiplied
it. You multiplied it. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. Of course, I'm in a stressful time, you know, with the book business at the moment.
Sure.
But, I wake up stressed in the morning. I wake up and I feel the stress. I feel my body very tense and very drained when I wake up in the morning. And I literally do deep breathing exercises before I ever even get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very well acquainted with stress and fear, but for me, in the very, very beginnings, due to my Pentecostal theology, I was horrified at the idea that I was going to become devil possessed.
Okay.
Because part of our Pentecostal theology is if you think too far out of the box, if you question too much, if you sin to the nth degree, you actually open yourself up for demonic influence or demonic possession. And so
I know all about it, Jerry. That's where I met Lisa at Central Bible College in Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, of course. Well, there you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I really was horrified over the idea that entertaining these thoughts that were contrary to, you know, to our doctrines, that it was opening me up for possession. And then when things would make sense to me that did not make sense to everyone around me, you know, in my little bubble, I couldn't help but wonder, fearfully wonder, was that because God had already given me over to a reprobate mind? Had he already seared my conscience?
Yeah.
Was I being deceived? Was I being given or sent a delusion? And so, That was nerve-wracking for some time. And I mean, I had some very intense prayer time over that. I remember one time in particular that the fear drove me into a time of prayer where I basically just was begging God to take my mind away. Mm-hmm. You know, I was saying, God, you know, I didn't give myself this brain. I didn't make myself a questioning person, you know, and I will gladly, if you will just, you know, perform this miracle, change my DNA and make me not the type of person who questions everything,
yeah,
then I will live for you wholeheartedly and faithfully, you know. But this is, you know, eventually I just got to the point where I'm like, God, if I'm going to be turned over to the devil, there's nothing I can do to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've tried for years and I don't know how not to question. You know, yeah. I don't know how to not do it. So that was extremely, extremely fearful that I really was completely wrong about everything.
Yeah.
And that God really was that petty and that there was something that I was missing.
It's interesting, isn't it, that there all those scriptures you mentioned about reprobate mind and
yes,
and being turned over to Satan for a time and all this kind of thing, it really does recall for me a lot of that stuff that I went through as well. There's scripture for everything, isn't there?
There is scripture for everything, and you know, I don't talk about this in the book, but it does play an important part in my, you know, deconversion, and I don't always really use that phrase too much. I like to claim that I graduated from religion, you know.
Yeah.
But I was in the martial arts for a few years, and that exposed me. This was prior to getting saved at Swaggart's. And it exposed me to a little bit of Eastern philosophy. My instructor was a very, very, very serious student of martial arts and of Eastern philosophy.
Definitely demonic.
I had a lot to repent over after that. And actually, I will tell you, this also isn't in the book, but one of my most shameful moments in my early evangelical career, or evangelizing career, was I was basically hired to preach a service one night in a Pentecostal church, and because this youth leader knew my history, knew that I was in the martial arts, the only way he would hire me to preach in this service was if I basically preached against the martial arts. And, you know, because he was wanting to warn his Pentecostal, I don't know if a Taekwondo school was opening up in town or what motivated him to be concerned about this. And I did it. I really sold myself as a hired gun for that evening, not nearly to the extent that he felt like he was paying for, but I definitely said things that I know that I didn't fully believe, for the sake of trying to get a paycheck, because we were literally starving to death.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the Eastern philosophy that I was exposed to, it did give me an appreciation for a doctrine or a theology that is actually congruent and intact. And when I came to the Bible, I looked for a similar structure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why there is a verse for everything is because it is such a hodgepodge of thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're true. Isn't any congruency in it. The only way to create congruency is to write the story after the fact and then read that back into it in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's unfortunate. And I did notice that early on, that it did not have the intact philosophy that I had been exposed to through Eastern philosophy.
Wow, that's an excellent point, Jerry. What would you like to say to people who are afraid of becoming an atheist?
You know, I will go back and try to make amends for talking so ugly about the title of the book. and say there really is hope after faith.
Okay.
Yeah, there really, really, really is hope after faith. It doesn't feel like it. You know, what we've underestimated, what we've been taught to underestimate as religionists,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that we really are a body. We really are the species of Homo sapiens with very, very severe limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And as these Homo sapiens making our way through this jungle of society, it's very hard for us to imagine what life can be like outside of our tribes and outside of our circles and outside of these particular mythologies that we've been raised up in that really are the core, or what we think is the core of our personalities. Mm-hmm. But there is still hope. There is still love. There still is community. All of the things that really, in many cases, brought you into religion in the first place, the answers for those needs still exist outside of faith. There still is hope outside of faith. There's still love. There's still community. There's still really this thing that you're looking for, which is you. You know, your own core and your own sense of values. Mm-hmm. All of that does exist outside of faith.
Wow. Thanks so much, Jerry. Is there anything that you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to say?
The only thing that comes to my mind is I would ask your listeners to, believe it or not, to truly, sincerely evaluate what they're doing and understand that just by participating in a community, and I regret that the only way to phrase that is to say just participating in a community, that truly is creating a space. That's a word that you mentioned early on. Mm-hmm. That is creating a space that has never existed before. Mm-hmm. And it is this beautiful act of humanism that we will later on see has played a great role in advancing our society, advancing our culture into a much brighter and more beautiful future. So please stay part of your community and continue to contribute, because it's extremely valuable for the future's sake.
Mm. Thanks so much. That's very encouraging. I'm going to write that down and pin it up on my mirror or something. It's awesome. No, it's excellent. You know, Jerry, I just want to encourage you as well. I really, one of the things I really enjoy from the Lasting Supper is I've gotten all kinds of support from there that I really didn't expect. And as you know, the journey can be arduous and difficult, and you're getting criticized from left, right, and center. You're getting encouraged as well, but right. It's really nice to have a place where you can go to for support and just say, hey, think of me today, you know, or whatever. And I just want to encourage you that there are some people on Lasting Supper that can really give some strong support and encourage you on, you know, on your, you know, what you're doing in the world. And also I really do thank you for your voice there and the wisdom and the concern and the graciousness that you've shown and during this podcast. And I feel very encouraged, and I hope, you know, I'm reading a book right now by Moore Gianni called Dying to Be Me. Mm-hmm. Where she had a near-death experience, and she learned a lot from it. And one of the things that I'm getting from the book is that people go through things and then can write about it in order to somehow alleviate the pain that we might have to experience. And I think that's what you're doing, is you're helping people transition away from religion or whatever, and not have to experience the same kind of pain and trauma that you did.
Yes. That is my hope.
Yeah.
And I think that's the pastor's heart.
Yep.
Is to try and to live a life of example, not a life of example in the religious standards way that we meant when we were religionists, but to persevere, to suffer if need be through situations and come out on the other side and explain the process. So if that ends up being, and I say this cautiously, all that comes from my life's experience is that it helps alleviate some suffering in other people's lives or helps them avoid it entirely, then I think any humanist will say that's more than enough reward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said it. Pastor's heart. I totally would say you have a pastor's heart.
And thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much for talking with me today, Jerry.
It is my pleasure.
Yeah.
And please have me back around anytime that you you know, you can't find someone. Just know that I'll always be your second string.
Awesome, man. I'm looking forward to reading your book, and I'm really looking forward to getting some feedback from this interview on the Lasting Supper. So we'll see you at the Lasting Supper, and I'll come down there sometime and have you know, barbecue with you.
That would be fantastic. If anybody wants to keep up with us, they can go to jerrydewitt.net. That's where we're trying to centralize everything. But everybody's welcome there and here for barbecue or anything else.
Awesome. Take care, man.
Thank you, my friend.
Thanks
I appreciate
a lot.
It so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That was Jerry DeWitt, ex-pastor and now author of the book Hope After Faith, also a member of the Lasting Supper. So you heard him. Connect with him. Sounds like a great guy. In fact, I think he is. So we'll see you guys on the Lasting Supper. Have a great day.